This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Sword of Dark Mage by Nelson Chirita, narrated by Gary Furlong. Prologue. A woman in black robes quietly approached a wooden door. Pyro. With a single word, a small fire materialized in the palm of her hand. She entered the nursery as quietly as she could. It was nighttime, and the only source of light was the magical flame. The baby did not stir. He continued to sleep peacefully in his crib. The woman simply stood there, looking down at him. He was only 3 days old, pink, perfect, and healthy. He was her seventh child. Like all of his brothers and sisters, she would protect him and teach him how to be a powerful mage. Being the seventh and youngest made him lucky. His older siblings would not see him as a threat. That meant the chances of having an accident were much less. It was a small mercy. It was not as though he would have a peaceful life. Being born into this family made that impossible, but things would be much easier than if he had been the first or second. "Things will be hard enough for you, my son," Lilith whispered. It always amazed her how pure and innocent the children were, how free of corruption and sin. Within her heart she felt a twinge at the thought of the things she would teach him, the things he would be made to endure to toughen and strengthen him. The world was a dark and dangerous place. You could not afford to be gentle. Reaching down, she touched his cheek with a single finger. His skin was warm and so very soft. "How I wish you could always be safe, but as my son, that is not something you're entitled to." For just a moment, she wondered if he would be better off if he'd been born in a peasant hut or some far-off land. He would never see the rivers of fire, never get to taste Ilsurian wine or wear silk, never study magic and experience its wonders, never know what power felt like, or see that marvelous look of terror in a person's eyes just before you ended their life. He would instead have an ordinary, common existence. His meals would be gruel and turnips, and he would labor in muddy fields from dawn to dusk. His life would be one of servitude, at the mercy of petty lords. One day he would marry some homely girl from his village and have a family of his own. He would live an entire lifetime never going more than 20 miles from where he was born. "But at least he would be safe," she thought. Lilith chuckled and shook her head. Such silly, pointless thoughts. There was no way her child could ever be ordinary, not with the blood that flowed through his veins. She was an archmage and head of a very powerful family, while his father had also been extraordinary. Surely this child would accomplish great things. In the back of her head she felt a presence approaching, her familiar. Still standing over the crib, she turned her face slightly towards the door. It opened without a sound, and an emaciated form entered the nursery. In the fire's light she could see the veins beneath his skin and the outline of his bones. His shadow flickered and danced on the wall behind him. He seemed very much at home in the darkness.
"Feeling maternal today?" he asked in his feather-soft voice.
His tongue ran over his bloodless lips as he cast his eyes towards the crib. Hungrily.
"What do you want, Enver?"
Short, shuffling steps brought him to her side to peer down at her son.
"His scent is rich and tempting. His blood would taste sweeter than summer wine, I'll wager."
His fingers twitched, and he leaned forward ever so slightly.
"You are forbidden to touch or harm any of my children."
She brought the fire close to his face and forced him to step back. "Never forget who your master is." He took a couple additional steps back away from her and held up his hands.
"I am not likely to."
"You do it all the time," she grunted. He was her familiar, and bound to her by their contract. That didn't keep him from trying to find all sorts of ways to cause mischief. "Why are you here?"
"I was curious," he said softly. "I wanted to see if it was true. Are the boy's eyes yellow?"
"I prefer to call them honey-colored." Lips twitched, and a wheezing laugh filled the chamber.
"It's so, then. He has the blood of Avalon in him."
"He has my blood, and that is all that counts."
"People won't see it that way."
"What does that matter?
The other families won't like it."
"They have no say in this." Inhuman eyes stared at her through the firelight.
"He will be hated."
"That would be true regardless. Those with power are always hated. He will learn to accept it as I have."
"So cruel," he teased. "You could make him a sacrifice, you know. Offer him up to the dark powers, a child with the enemy's blood. Surely you would be rewarded."
"We sacrifice the deformed or the sickly. My son is healthy and strong." He opened his mouth with a fresh retort.
"Be silent," Lilith said with annoyance.
His jaw snapped shut. Defiance marred his face, but he made no sound. "Go," she commanded. "I do not want to see you again until tomorrow." Body stiff and movement rigid, he left. When he was gone, she again turned back to her son.
"You will have a hard time, my son, but there is greatness inside you. Your life will not be an easy one, but I am sure it will be filled with wonders."
She placed a soft kiss on his forehead.
"Sleep well, Waldo."
With that, she quietly departed. Chapter 1. The First Quest. The Shattered Lands held more than 1,000 nations. Kingdoms, duchies, baronies, republics, oligarchies, magocracies, theocracies, tribal federations, dictatorships, and lands with no law at all could be found. Each individual nation was independent. So-called kings had no more authority beyond their borders than a baron or a high priest did. There were alliances and treaties, but no ruler ever swore fealty to another. The human nations shared a common tongue, a number system, a calendar, and a coinage system. But there was no single law or authority. Wars were constant, as were corruption and sickness. Monsters roamed the land, crime was endemic, and many feared their own rulers. Nations were born and swallowed up. Peace was fragile, and justice an illusion. It was a world filled with magic and bloodshed. One of these nations was called Alteroth. It was located near the very heart of the Shattered Lands. It was among the largest and most powerful countries, for it was a land of dark mages and dark magics. Undead soldiers patrolled the borders and enforced the laws. The dead served and the living obeyed. Those who could use black magic held absolute power. 7 families ruled here. Though suspicious of each other, they were bound together by mutual need. The rest of the world hated and feared them, and would gladly destroy them if they could. The neighboring nations were too divided to form a coalition, and would not dare challenge Alteroth's might. So long as the 7 families stood united, they were far too powerful to attack. For those who practiced the dark arts, Alteroth was a sanctuary and a haven. The 7 great families sought influence and wealth in the wider world. They reveled in the fear and terror they inspired, and treasured their reputations. The 7 families thrived on the dread they inspired, and did all they could to appear terrifying, both to their own people and to the world in general. That was the reason the Council of 7 was meeting. Within the vast council chamber, 6 men in black robes sat around a table, eyeing one another. There was no leader of the council. No one was allowed to stand 1 inch higher than the rest. Each member was the head of one of the great families, and a master of the dark arts. They were not friends, and they did not trust. They worked together because of need. Enslaved elven maidens poured wine, eyes downcast and properly attentive. There was an uncomfortable silence as attention flickered to the single empty seat.
"This is dangerous," Lorum Blackwater muttered. "Not announcing a meeting to one of our own."
"I sent a message," a sickly man with rotten teeth said. "I suppose the slave was slow in delivering it. I'll have him killed in apology."
"That's not going to fool anyone, Dante," Baldwin Blooddrinker said. He had forest green eyes and ears that were slightly pointed. His features were smooth and delicate, almost feminine.
Dante Poisondagger offered a putrid smile.
"I know that, but it's enough to cover us. Mistakes do happen."
"We need to come to a decision before she arrives," Gareth Wormwood said.
The others all nodded wearily.
"We should just kill him,"
Darius Heartless shouted.
"He's a disgrace, an embarrassment. He has no place among us."
"He is heir to one of the great families, and you cannot deny he has skill with magic," Xyla Soulbreaker said.
"You call what he does talent?"
Heartless challenged.
"Well, he can use magic," Soulbreaker said defensively. "Some of his spells are quite effective."
"I've seen the things he can do," Heartless said with contempt. "It's white magic. He will never make a fitting head of family, much less a member of this council."
"None of us are arguing about that," Gareth said. "The question is, what do we do about it?"
"Kill him,"
Darius said flatly.
"How?"
Gareth asked.
"The boy never leaves the castle. I swear he is better protected than a virgin sacrifice." "Is there any way we could convince her to choose another heir?" Xyla suggested.
"Have you ever tried changing her mind about anything?"
Dante asked in annoyance.
"Can't Walter be the heir?"
Darius demanded.
"Don't be stupid. Walter is dead,"
Gareth reminded.
"He's only mostly dead."
"The dead cannot rule the living," Baldwin stated in his usual well-bred manner. "Heads of families must meet certain criteria. For instance, how exactly would Walter father an heir?"
Darius shrugged.
He could stitch one together, I suppose. He would still be more fitting than that miserable disgrace.
Who's a miserable disgrace? A cold voice said from the doorway. The six men turned to the new arrival, the seventh member of the council, and the most powerful necromancer in all Alteroth, Lilith Corpselover. Pale, alabaster skin, long straight raven hair with a full feminine figure that her tight-fitting black robes showed off nicely. In her hand, she held a wand carved from human bone. Drawing a wand was always a provocative step. The other members all carefully placed their hands on their own. No one else actually drew one out, though.
Just who is a disgrace? Lilith repeated, gripping her wand with both hands.
I think you know who,
Darius told her.
Lilith, the time has come for us to address the situation, Blooddrinker said. Let us sit down and talk about this rationally.
The fact is, your youngest cannot be your heir,
Soulbreaker said.
Since when does the council decide who the heir of a great family is? Lilith demanded. That has always been the choice of the family head.
Lilith, Baldwin said, sounding pleasant. Even you must admit he is not someone who could replace you, either as the head of the Corpselover family or as a member of this council.
Why? She demanded. Because his blood isn't pure enough to suit you? I can name someone here whose ancestry isn't exactly unmixed.
She stared pointedly at his ears. Baldwin spread his hands before him.
His parentage is not the question here, Lilith. We are not uncivilized, after all. Whatever it is that runs through my veins, no one has ever questioned my ability as a dark mage. It is your son's talent that is the issue.
He has immense natural talent. He can do things even I can't manage.
The six men looked at each other. It was Dante Poisondagger who decided to force the matter.
Your son is a white mage.
Lilith snapped. She grabbed the small man about the neck with her free hand and began to shake him as a dog would a rat. Instantly, the five other men were on their feet, pointing their wands at her. Despite having the advantage, none of them dared cast a spell.
Say that again, you rotten-mouthed dove!
Lilith screamed into his face.
Let's just calm down, shall we?
Baldwin asked serenely. He had his wand pointed at her, and a killing spell on his lips.
I'm sure Poisondagger did not mean to insult you. Isn't that right, Dante?
That's right,
Dante managed to get out as he was being rattled.
Please forgive me.
Fine,
she spat out and released her grip, dropping him unceremoniously onto the floor. Though only slightly appeased, she knew there were limits to what even she could get away with.
I shouldn't expect anything better from a poison dagger.
Shall we all sit down and talk now?
Baldwin suggested. Nodding, Lilith took her usual seat. The others put away their wands and returned to theirs. Poisondagger looked paler than usual and avoided even glancing in Lilith's direction. As soon as they were all seated, Baldwin spoke again.
Lilith, you know how important it is that we guard our reputation as ruthless and powerful dark mages. Fear is our shield. Were the other nations to see any sort of weakness, they might try to attack us.
Especially Avalon and the Alliance,
Darius put in.
Baldwin nodded. I beg you, see this from our point of view.
Lilith shifted in her seat.
It had to be Baldwin who brought that up. It would have been so much easier if it had been Darius with his bluster or Dante with his usual double talk. Baldwin was always sensible and as fair as anyone here could be.
I'm willing to admit my son is a bit unusual for a dark mage, but he has the potential to be extraordinary. He will definitely prove to be a worthy successor.
Do you truly believe that, Lilith?
Baldwin asked, a sudden glimmer in his eyes.
I do. In that case, would you agree to a test of his abilities?
Lilith frowned.
What sort of test?
In one of the highest towers of Castle Corpselover, a young man in black robes was down on his knees. At his side were several opened books as well as scrolls with hand-drawn sketches. In his hand was a piece of chalk. On the stone floor he had drawn a summoning circle with a myriad of arcane symbols and runes surrounding it.
This time it will work, he muttered to himself. I know it will.
He had checked the formula time and again, and was certain it was correct. He was going over the chalked symbols he'd written with exquisite care. He was determined that this time there would be no mistakes. Everything had to be perfect. As he was bent over studying the runes and symbols, the door to the room slowly and silently opened. A figure with tattered and filthy black robes slipped inside. From a distance, it might have passed for human. Up close, it never would. The skin was an unnatural shade of gray. The eyes were milky white and without pupils. Its fingertips ended in razor-sharp, bony talons. The lips were bloated and an inky blue. When they pulled back in a ravenous grin, they revealed sharp, pointed teeth. The creature stretched out its arms and ready to tear apart its unsuspecting victim. Still bent over and studying his handiwork, the teenage boy waved a single hand. Repulso. It felt magical energies take hold and slam it into the far wall.
Arr!
The creature screamed in frustration, not actual pain. Hello, brother, the boy said without ever bothering to look up. The creature struggled against the magical energies that were holding it pinned to the far wall. It knew it was hopeless, but still fought to get free.
I don't mind you wanting to kill me, but could you please wait until I'm done?
The zombie stopped struggling and bore its teeth in a hateful snarl.
I want to tear out your throat. I want to gnaw on your bones. I want to feast on your still beating heart while you watch.
Yes, I know, but could you at least wait until after I'm done? Is that too much to ask, Walter?
How did you know I was here? Walter Corpselover demanded. You couldn't have heard me. I was as silent as the grave. You didn't have any wards set up.
Sighing, he slowly got up and faced his brother. His face was boyish and looked young even for 16. He had small, delicate hands and a thin, undersized frame. His short, cropped hair was the color of gold, and his eyes were a bright, clear shade of yellow.
You're a zombie, Walter. No matter how well-preserved your body is, it still stinks of rot. There's no way I couldn't smell you from 20 yards away. Besides,
he waved a single hand. Hidden runes on the cell floor suddenly revealed themselves. Even if I had done nothing, you'd have been held in place as soon as you took one more step. Walter's whitish eyes widened as he saw all the trap spells that had been set for him.
How? How did I not notice?
Ordinary humans could not sense hidden wards and circles, but mages and certain monsters could. The undead could not sense or feel magic. Waldo Corpselover looked at his brother with sympathy. In this family, death was not the ultimate tragedy. Weakness was. Walter had been 3 years older and, for a time, the designated heir. He had been powerful, arrogant, and ruthless. In other words, a typical dark mage. A glorious future had stretched out before him. Everyone assumed that eventually he would replace Mother and take over her position as head of the family. Then one day Grandfather ate him. Not all of him, just his heart. Mother had done what she could, raising him as a zombie. She had done an incredible job. He retained most of his memories and could still think and feel emotion. Walter could even still use some minor spells. With the exception of liches, that was considered impossible for the undead. He was an exceptional zombie, but still only a fraction of what he'd once been. In life, Walter had always treated his younger brother with contempt. In death, he openly hated him. Not simply because he was still alive, but because everything Walter had wanted and treasured had been handed over to Waldo. Walter could no longer smell a flower or feel a warm breeze on his face, but he could still feel hatred.
Is that pity I see in your piss-colored eyes? Ha! What a joke!
You know I never wanted to be heir.
Liar!
Walter cursed.
Don't pretend. The joke is that even like this, I'm a better dark mage than you will ever be.
Still pinned to the wall, Walter glanced at the summoning circle Waldo had been working on. Walter could no longer perform the deeper magics, but retained his knowledge.
You're trying to summon a homunculus this time? I summoned one when I was just 9. Don't you feel pathetic that you can't manage that when you're 16?
Big talk from a zombie who can't even move right now.
If you really are the next head of the family, I weep for Corpselover.
Can zombies weep?
Waldo's right hand sliced the air in front of him.
Nunc.
The spell ended, and Walter was free once more.
If you'll excuse me, I still have work to do.
Waldo went back to a summoning circle.
You're turning your back on me?
Walter growled. Why not? We both know you can't touch me. Waldo did not have to turn around to know that would make his brother furious.
I really am going to kill you.
Yes, I know. But wait until after I'm done here. Close the door on the way out.
Still not bothering to look, Waldo heard the footsteps and the door slamming shut. In this castle there were undead servants and living slaves. The only people who were free were the members of the family. He'd read plenty of books about the people who lived in other countries. Folks who in their whole lives never saw the dead walking, and would be terrified just by a single unarmed skeleton shuffling towards them. For Waldo, dark magics and the undead were the stuff of ordinary life. He had been born into this world, and to his eyes, it was all normal. Waldo loved Alteroth, with its volcanoes and slow-flowing rivers of magma. He loved the way they glowed at night, and how they rumbled and sent ash up into the perpetually gray sky. Waldo had witnessed several eruptions and thought them beautiful beyond words. He loved the city of Alter, with its clean and logical design. The squat, identical houses packed in their neat rows, the avenues that all ran in perfect lines. The city was a monument to order and control. He didn't get to actually visit it often, but he could stare at its lovely symmetry for hours from his window. It was a joy to behold. In this world, power was everything. All his life he'd been taught not to fear death, only weakness. Being weak was the only unforgivable sin. Waldo wanted to be strong. Not really for himself, but for his family, and for his mother. He did not want to fail or bring them shame. For the sake of his family, he wanted to be a great dark mage. His mother had had a total of 7 children, of which he was the youngest and only one still currently alive. 4 were dead, and 2, including Walter, were mostly dead. They had all died violent deaths, none of them living to reach 19. All had been born with the gift of summoning mana and the ability to use magic. Their individual talents had differed. Roland, who Waldo did not remember, had specialized in fire magic. Gwen had taken after Mom, and been a natural at necromancy. Walter had always had a gift at summoning and controlling monsters. All of them had been talented with great potential. All of them had been a credit to their house. Waldo thought about his own abilities and let out a frustrated grunt. Healing and protection magic. That was what he was best at. He had absolutely no talent at necromancy. He couldn't even reanimate a mouse. Whenever he attempted any sort of destructive spell, it always went horribly wrong. And not even a good sort of horribly wrong. When he tried to summon monsters, he let out another frustrated sigh. The ability to use magic was, in itself, a rare trait in humans. When it manifested, it differed from person to person, both in depth and in direction. Some would never have the strength to do much more than levitate a book or light a candle. Others could summon giants or tear open the earth. The amount of mana a person could draw was an inborn ability. You could learn spells and train to draw the energy more easily, but the limit was in your blood. There were written spells and incantations, rules of magic, runes and wards, things that a magic user could learn and study. Spellbooks, wands, rods, magical rings, scrolls, and other items made casting certain spells easier. Yet magic was much more of an art than a science. In theory, every magic user should have been capable of casting any spell, so long as it did not require too much mana. In practice, it was nothing like that. The sorts of spells a wizard could work were a reflection of his soul. Waldo stood. The summoning circle was perfect. He would bring forth a homunculus and bind it to his will. Being 16, it was long past time to have his own familiar. He began performing the required hand gestures and spoke the incantation.
Iscaros venti, septaros abro homunculi, tenos arrio venti semaparos!
The circle and the symbols he had so carefully chalked suddenly blazed with light. He felt a mana flow out of him and into the circle.
It's going to work this time. I know it, Waldo thought.
The interior of the circle vanished, as space and time were momentarily shattered.
Bring me my servant,
Waldo shouted into the void.
Bending to his will, the spell brought forth a living creature.
Chirp, chirp, chirp. There, within the summoning circle, was a confused blue bird.
Aw, not again.
6 skeletons in rusted chainmail walked along the hall. With each step, the scabbards attached to their bony hips clicked. These were just a handful of the guards who protected Castle Corpselover. They would patrol these corridors again, and again, and again, without fail until their bodies broke down. The guards of this castle never tired, never complained, and would never betray their mistress. If a stranger appeared before them, they would draw their swords and fight to the end. How could anyone ask for more than that? Waldo passed them without a second thought. They were as much a part of his home as the paintings on the wall or the furniture. They shuffled past, unheeding. Waldo was thinking about his most recent failure. The summoning circle had been perfect, and so had the enchantment. He understood that the more difficult the spell, the easier it was to make a mistake. Something as basic as, say, lighting a candle could be done with nothing more than a thought. More difficult tasks might require a word or two or a hand gesture. Complex spells needed a specific incantation and hand signs or the use of an item like a wand or magical ring. Summoning a creature without a contract was a high-end spell and demanded an incantation, hand gestures, and a summoning circle with a proper containment for the specific creature.
I did everything right, Waldo thought. I did! Why didn't it work? In a sense, the summoning had worked. Sort of. But a blue bird was not a homunculus. The only positive he could take from his recent effort was that at least he could summon. He couldn't even use necromancy. For a corpse lover, that was worse than embarrassing. It was downright humiliating. His family was known for its ability, and raising and using the dead. It was where their damned name came from. His mother was acknowledged the greatest necromancer in all Alteroth. Being unable to use it at all made Waldo feel unworthy. He wanted so much to make mother and the family proud of him. How could he ever do that when he was such a complete failure at the family specialty? As he neared a corner in the hallway, he waved his hand. Repulso! Even unseen, Walter was thrown from the hiding spot and sent flying down a side corridor. His brother cried out in frustration as Waldo kept going. Healing spells, wards, spell traps, and protective magics all came to him easily. That was his gift. That sort of magic did have its place and its uses, but in Alteroth that place was quite low. No one respected healers. The ability to destroy or control was what mattered. Behind him, Walter shouted,
"Why do you always just let me go? Why don't you destroy me? Am I so pathetic to you?"
It would make Mother sad. He heard Walter curse him. Waldo knew his brother really would kill him if he ever got the chance. Mother would be upset, but she wouldn't punish Walter if it happened. Children were protected until they knew enough to put on the robes as apprentice mages. From that point on, you were expected to protect yourself. Not just from outside enemies, but from your own family as well. The world was hard, and you had to be strong enough to not only face it, but to take what you wanted from it. There was no place in the family for the weak. Waldo wondered if that was what he was. The truth was, he had no wish to kill anyone, not even Walter. He had no desire to control others or acquire power. All he wanted was to make Mom proud of him. Waldo wanted to be a powerful dark mage and a proper corpse lover, because that was what would make her proud. He had talent with magic, and the ability to draw on quite a lot of mana. What he didn't have was the same mindset as everyone else. Why did he have a problem with killing? Why didn't the idea of having power over others excite him? Why had he never hungered to be heir?
What is wrong with me?
Castle Corpse Lover had 9 towers and 5 dungeons. The main castle itself had 5 floors, each with dozens of rooms and a different layout. The hallway twisted and turned with various side corridors that came to abrupt ends or went in a circle. Some of the stairways only went up or down one floor, and the walls were riddled with secret passageways and hidden rooms. It was not hard at all to go from one end of the castle to the other without ever stepping into the main hallway, if you knew what you were about. On the 5th floor, he took the 2nd corridor on the left off the main hall. Halfway down it, there was another side corridor. This one curved around like a fishhook until it ended in a small alcove. Hanging on the wall was a full-length mirror, 6 feet high, with brass trim that was polished so that it shined like gold. The mirror itself was made of ordinary glass. Standing before it, Waldo could not see himself or the corridor around him. There was no reflection. There was only a perfect, gray emptiness there. "Sister, will you come and talk to me?" He waited. She usually came when he asked, but not always. He waited for a long time while nothing happened. He was about to go when he saw some of the mirror's gray melt away. Colors swirled, like mixed paint in a bucket. A figure slowly began to take form. It took a few minutes, but finally she was standing there on the other side of the mirror. His sister Gwen. She had been 16 when she died on her first quest. It had happened outside the borders of Alteroth, so there had been no way to recover her body. Mother had instead bound her soul into this mirror. Waldo had been only 12 when Gwen died, still just a child under mother's protection. Gwen had always been gentle with him. Unlike Walter and most of his other siblings, she had never mocked his eyes or teased him about his many failures. Gwen had never bullied him, and he had loved her almost as much as he had Mother. She had taken after Mother both in looks and talent. Gwendolyn had been a promising necromancer and candidate to be heir. The sweetness she had shown him had not affected her ability to be a dark mage. She appeared before him, dressed in black robes that highlighted her attractive figure. She had long, straight black hair, auburn eyes, and the same delicate features as Mother. Her skin, though, was a bleached white, and her throat was slashed from ear to ear. The cut slowly bled all the while she stood there.
"You look sad, little brother."
The words came in a rasp, her wound quivering with each syllable.
"Did Walter try and eat you again?"
"Yes, he did, but that was no big deal."
Gwen's pale lips twitched into an amused grin.
I would have destroyed him a long time ago. You are truly merciful.
Please don't insult me.
I'm only being truthful,
Gwen croaked. In Alteroth, and within the Corpse Lover family, mercy was not a virtue, but a weakness.
I just don't hate him, Waldo confessed. I know I should. The Dark Powers know he was never fair to me even when he was alive. But I just feel sorry for him now. He was the heir and a dark mage. Now what is he?
You have a kind heart.
If you're going to keep insulting me, I'm leaving. Gwen gave a slow, rasping laugh.
I truly love you, little brother, even though you are strange.
Waldo sighed.
I love you, too.
In this world, love was also seen as a weakness, but it was at least an accepted one. It was only natural for human beings to feel love, even if they were necromancers. In Alteroth, parents still loved their children. Children loved their parents. Husbands and wives, sometimes, loved each other, and people could love their friends and companions. Love alone, though, was never an excuse for being soft or indulgent. Seeking power had to come before all else.
If Walter's not the cause, what has you so glum?
It's the usual, I suppose, Waldo admitted. I tried to summon a homunculus and wound up with a bird instead.
What did you do with it?
Gwen asked curiously. I sent it back. Gwen rasped out a laugh.
Anyone else would have killed it, you know.
I know, Waldo said miserably.
I just don't like killing. There's something terribly wrong with me, isn't there?
Yes, but it's all right. I like you as you are. You have your own strength and your own way. Don't worry so much. In the end, you'll be the head of the family.
Waldo felt his stomach turn. She had told him that before and made him promise not to tell anyone. Those who were spirits could look into both the past and future. When Gwen made a prediction, it always happened.
There's no way that someone like me could ever be head of the family, Waldo muttered.
Even if it can't be Walter, there are other branches of the family line. Mother will find someone else. It would never be me. Gwen smiled at him. Her eyes sparkled and she spoke in a slow, melodic tone, as if reciting the words to a poem.
When mother, sister, and brother are gone, you shall receive that which others covet, and the cost will be that which you treasure most. They shall kneel down and acknowledge you, and your crown shall be made from ashes and blood.
He felt a cold shiver go down his spine.
Is that a prophecy, sister?
Remember that there is more than one path to get to wherever it is you want to go, and sometimes the long way is best. Find your own road, and don't worry about how others would make the journey.
Gwen, what you said before, was that a prophecy?
His sister was grinning at him.
Little brother, did you know that when a girl falls in love with someone, she will do anything for him? If she gets a little possessive, sometimes try to endure it. It's a sign of love.
Huh? What are you talking about?
He had no interest at all in girls. His life was difficult enough as it was. Gwen rasped out another laugh as her form began to dissolve.
Don't be late to dinner, little brother. Mother has important news for you.
What news? And what did you mean before?
You'll see.
She winked and said nothing more. Soon she was gone completely, and the mirror was once again empty.
That's just great. I have a zombie brother who just wants to kill me, and a ghost sister who just likes to confuse me. I don't know which of you is more annoying.
No reply came from the mirror. Sighing in frustration, Waldo left the alcove. Having two run-ins already, Walter decided not to show up for dinner. Waldo did not mind. Watching a zombie rip apart a pig carcass had never done anything for his appetite. He wondered if his brother would take out his frustration on one of the slaves. There was a long, ornate dining table with 40 seats down in the grand hall. This was where the family always took its meals. On occasion, members of the extended family or members of one of the other great families would be invited. It didn't happen often. Waldo had grown up in relative isolation. He'd known his mother and siblings, his teachers and the slaves. Outsiders were not welcome. There were people the family did business with and others they ruled over. There were no friends. For the Corpse Lover family, the people of the world were divided into three categories. Those with less power, those with similar power, and those with greater power. Those with less power were treated as slaves or servants. Those with similar power were treated with wary respect and never trusted. Those with greater power were feared and obeyed. The family did not currently acknowledge anyone to be in this third class. To Waldo, friendship was an alien concept. He understood liking certain people better than others.
He preferred certain slaves and teachers. Within the family, there was a strict hierarchy, and how you were treated depended on just where you ranked within it. Some family members could be more gentle, Gwen. Some more harsh, Walter. But it was always understood who was more important and who was less. For almost his entire life, Waldo had been at the very bottom. He had been the youngest, and as a child, had had no power. When he was 13, he was allowed to wear the black robes as an apprentice, but was still the weakest. At each meal, Mother sat at the head of the table, and the children sat in order of who was strongest. The stronger you were, the closer you sat to Mother, with the one sitting to her immediate right being the heir. The order was not set, and he could remember it changing many times. His older brothers and sisters competed and fought with each other to prove themselves. Mother would reward or punish them by changing their seat at the table. It was not love or favoritism that decided the order. It was just a reflection of who was the strongest. Waldo was always the one seated furthest away, and he was always seated on the left side of the table. He was never really angry about that. He accepted that he was the weakest, and it was enough that there was a place for him. Growing up, all that he wanted was to be worthy of his family. Then, one by one, they began to die. Dark mages were expected to go out into the world and take. The strong took from the weak. That was the way things worked. Every member of the ruling family was expected to add to its wealth and fearsome reputation. A dark mage's worth was reflected in the amount of gold and slaves they could acquire, and by how many enemies they could kill. Those were the true measures of a dark mage's power, and each of his brothers and sisters were determined to prove themselves the strongest. That meant facing constant danger, and the usual consequences. There were never any funerals. If a body could be recovered, it was given a pyre as the family bore witness, but there were no prayers, no ceremony. If the body could not be recovered, Mother would just make an announcement. Carl is dead. That was all. There were no prolonged mourning periods. Mother would be sad, but she would never say much. There would be one less place at the dinner table, one less competitor for the title of heir. No one would ask how they died or want to remember them. Bit by bit, they were simply forgotten. There were the living, and the dead, and the mostly dead. Going from one to the other was just accepted. If you were strong enough, you would survive no matter the dangers. If you were not, it didn't matter what became of you. When Gwen died, Waldo had cried for her at the table. His mother had gotten up and slapped him. "If you have to do that, then at least do it where no one can see you." It was just one of the many hard lessons he had been forced to learn. As a child, Waldo had moved up the table, as one brother or sister after another disappeared. By the time he put on the robes, there was only Walter left ahead of him. The two of them were seated next to Mother, with him on her left. When Walter died, they switched places. Waldo found himself on Mother's right, in the seat reserved for the heir. "The dead cannot rule the living," his mother had said after raising Walter. "The heir must provide children, and must be able to make contracts and work the greater magics. You are heir now, Waldo." That was how he had come to his current position. He hadn't done anything to earn it. He was just the last one breathing. As he approached the head of the table, Mother silently watched him. She looked tired. She'd had her robes on when she had suddenly left, but wasn't wearing them anymore. She had a comfortable, loose-fitting brown shift on, and some slippers. Though she was at home, Waldo noted her wand was still tucked into a large pocket. His mother's long black hair was tangled and messy. The occasional strands of gray were getting more numerous and noticeable, as were the lines radiating from the corner of her eyes. His mother was still a beautiful woman, and more powerful than she had ever been, but there was no denying that she was getting older. Not that Waldo would ever say so out loud. He wasn't suicidal. "Did everything go well, Mother?" Waldo asked as he took his seat. "No, it did not, but we'll discuss that after dinner." Waldo felt a sudden nervousness. Growing up in this family, he'd learned to be wary of any change in routine. His mother had never discussed meetings with the council with him before. "Did something special happen?" Lilith turned to face her son. "I dislike repeating myself. Must I?" "No, Mother. Please forgive me," he apologized quietly. She nodded, and then glanced to her left at the empty seat. Zombies didn't have very good table manners and preferred to devour their food raw and still struggling. When Walter joined them, he usually just had half of a pig carcass placed on a large silver tray. "Your brother did not want to dine with us today. Did anything happen between you two?" Waldo shrugged. "Nothing unusual. He just tried to attack me twice." His mother nodded slightly.
That was routine. Why haven't you destroyed Walter?
Do you want me to?
No, but that was not my question. It has tried to kill you many times. It is your enemy.
Never spare an enemy. Never show mercy. Those were rules that had been drilled into him since childhood. He hesitated and answered carefully. His mother had regularly tested his other siblings. She had never really tested him before, but it was certainly possible.
Walter is no real threat to me, and I know you would not be happy if I destroyed my brother.
A slight grin touched her lips, but it only made her appear sadder.
You have always been a thoughtful child.
Just what does that mean? She gestured to one of the waiting slaves, and trays of food were brought out of the kitchen.
Let's just have a nice meal together.
Yes, mother. The slaves brought out a small feast for just the two of them. They both picked at their food in near silence. Freshly baked bread, roast pork, beef, chicken, and other delicacies went untouched, and Waldo guessed the slaves would get to enjoy them. Something very strange was going on. Everything had been normal this morning, before she had set out for the council meeting. It did not take a genius to see that something had happened there. His mother ran the family affairs completely on her own. Whatever occurred must have been of great importance if she felt the need to discuss it with him. Once the dishes had been cleared away, and the slaves had departed, she told him what was going on.
It's time, Waldo. You will be leaving on your first quest tomorrow.
Waldo blinked.
Oh.
His mother lifted a single eyebrow and looked slightly amused.
Is that all you have to say?
Oh.
Well, I am 16, and it's not like I didn't know this day was coming. I would have liked a little more warning, I suppose.
This is how it has always been done. You have been preparing for this day since the day of your birth. You should not need any more time.
You're right, Mother. Of course, I am ready.
Inside, Waldo was anything but sure of that. I will come back with servants and piles of treasure. I will definitely make you proud.
Servants and piles of treasure, his mother echoed quietly.
Will you also bring back the heads of the enemies you have killed?
I will try to, Waldo answered hesitantly. I will do my best.
Is that what you'll say when you're facing a charging knight or a hill giant? His mother slowly shook her head.
This will be your first time facing real danger. Oh, I know Walter has tried to kill you, and that some of the others might have if you had put the robes on sooner. But those were all threats you were familiar with, ones you knew to watch for. When you leave this castle, and then leave Altaroth, you will be alone and surrounded by enemies. This is the rite of passage every dark mage of a ruling house must endure. You must prove you are worthy, not just by surviving, but by shedding blood and returning home with treasure.
Do you expect to come back empty-handed and just say, I did my best? She gave a rude snort.
That would be fine if you were a poison dagger.
Waldo's face reddened.
I'm not a coward, Mother. My son, if I'd ever thought you were, I would have killed you myself. I know your worth. That is not what concerns me.
Then what is?
You don't remember your brother Roland, do you?
Waldo shook his head.
Well, I'm not surprised. You were only 3 at the time he died. He was my firstborn. His father was Martin Wormwood. Martin was very skilled at fire magics. He would definitely have become the head of his family if the poison daggers hadn't murdered him.
Lilith Corpselover had never married. Had she, her husband would have become the family head. Instead, she had enjoyed a long series of lovers. Each of her 7 children had had a different father. The men came and went, and none of them were allowed to have any part in her children's lives. Among the great families, there was no stigma in being born out of wedlock, so long as there was one parent with elite blood and the child had the ability to use magic.
Roland was just like his father, a powerful and ruthless fire user. I taught him everything I knew, and he never disappointed me. When he was just 14, I took him with me on a trip to the Barren Mounts. I wanted some new goblins, and I thought it would be a good experience for him. Would you believe we ran into a giant? 20 feet tall at the very least, and a tree for a club in his hands. Roland was closer to him than I was, and I called for him to get clear so I could deal with the brute. Calmly, as if it were just practice, he lifted his wand and poured enough fire on that stupid beast to roast him in less than a minute. I was 50 yards away, and I felt as though I was starting to bake. She sighed wistfully. We ate his flesh for the rest of our trip.
He killed a great monster at 14? Waldo was impressed. Killing a great monster was quite a feat for anyone who was not a master.
Why did I never hear about that before?
Lilith shrugged.
Because he's dead. So what does it matter now?
The point is, he was everything I could hope for in an heir. When he set off on his first quest, I was certain he would come home with an army of slaves, piles of gold, and the heads of at least a dozen knights. I really was sure he would be fine.
Her eyes drifted, no doubt recalling his long-forgotten brother.
He died, his mother said simply. He went to the kingdom of Lothos and never came back. A knight defeated him and left his head on a pike. As strong as he was, he ended up as rotting flesh somewhere far from home. I've always known the first quest is dangerous, mother. Three of my children have died on their first quests, his mother said. All of them were as well prepared as I could make them, and all of them had learned how to kill by the time they set out. Yet they still died. Do you truly understand? No one cares about doing your best. The point is to survive. That means doing what you need to, not what you want to.
I know that, mother. It's not like I fail on purpose, he answered quietly.
My son, I don't believe you are a failure or weak. You simply have different strengths. I have tried to bring you along, slowly, in the hopes that your special talents would develop on their own. I had been planning to put off your first quest for a while. How long were you planning to wait, mother? I'm 16. Everyone usually goes between 15 and 17.
I was hoping to put it off until you were 30.
Waldo stared at her, with his mouth hanging open.
Or until you managed to kill someone, his mother added pointedly. Whichever came first.
So the fact that you're sending me now is a sign you believe I'm ready?
No, his mother said. The council has forced my hand.
Wait, my going on the quest now was a decision made by the council? His mother nodded unhappily.
Not only are you going on your first quest, but there are a set of conditions you will have to meet before you can return.
Conditions? Lilith narrowed her eyes.
What sort of test? Your son is 16, is he not? Baldwin asked.
He is, Lilith answered suspiciously.
Isn't it time he went on his first quest?
Baldwin inquired in a reasonable tone. Around the table, heads began to nod.
If he really is worthy of being your heir, then let him prove it,
Daria said. I will be the one who decides when he should go, Lilith stated. It is always the family head that decides.
Not always,
Baldwin remained placid.
There have been other occasions when the council insisted someone take their first quest early. There is precedent for it.
If your son is strong enough to replace you, then he should be strong enough for this, Gareth said.
You cannot keep him hidden inside your castle forever, Xylas added.
If he can succeed, that would certainly convince us and this whole matter would be closed,
Darius said.
You have to admit that it's only reasonable, Lorem piled on.
Lilith's eyes went to each of them in turn. Only Poison Dagger had not spoken in favor of sending her son out, and from his previous comment it was obvious where he stood.
They have already decided, Lilith realized with sickening certainty.
While she would not hesitate to take on any of the other houses, even she did not have the strength to fight all six.
So you intend to force me into this? Lilith asked.
Why do you even need to be forced?
Darius snarled.
You sent your other children out when the time came.
I sent them out when I felt each was ready, Lilith answered coldly. He is my only living child now. Do you blame me for being cautious?
From our perspective, it looks more like you're acting out of love, Darius said.
I do love my son, Lilith admitted. However, I would never try to protect him just because of that. I have good reason to be patient. He is my sole remaining heir.
He is your only remaining child, Baldwin clarified. If the tree dies, you take a healthy branch and plant it. You have cousins and other relatives. Just how many branch families are there in Corpse Lover?
47, Lilith admitted.
In the extended family, there were a dozen masters, and probably at least that many with the potential.
All of them better,
Dante muttered. Lilith sent him a sharp look, and he seemed to shrink into his chair.
Don't blame us if your child is weak, Xylas said.
My son is unusual, I admit, but he is not weak, Lilith said. Even the strong do not always survive the first quest.
Then we must make absolutely certain he is strong, Baldwin said. If you are to choose him over the branch members of your family, it needs to be obvious he really is the best choice.
Lilith had an unpleasant suspicion of where Baldwin was leading. He continued, confirming her misgivings.
We require he meet certain conditions before he will be permitted to return home.
That is not how the quest works. Each individual decides when they have done enough. The only absolute requirement is that they leave Alteroth and visit a foreign land.
Which means he might cower in some cave just over the border for a few days and then run home, Xylos said.
Darius nodded.
It's happened before. It's disgraceful, but it has been done.
My son would never do something so cowardly.
She sent a cold look in Dante's direction.
He's not a poison dagger after all.
What does that mean?
Dante asked even as he squirmed.
Your son Daryl spent, what, 3 days in Galicia before returning back, with his tail between his legs? What about your son Pyrrhus? He killed a couple families out in the barrens, and that was all. I've never heard any complaints about his worth.
Dante fumed, but no one spoke up in his family's defense.
We are not all poison daggers, Gareth said pointedly. I lost Cersei, my daughter from my third wife, just a month ago.
My son Kiska was burned alive at the stake in Dragaal, Baldwin said. Darius held out his hands and began ticking names off on his fingers.
Aban, Astera, Casper, Daria, Iwa, Faraz, Jasmine, Melkor, Razine, Cheyenne.
All 10 fingers were up.
I can still continue. We've all lost children on the first quest.
Except for Dante, Xylos pointed out.
Yes, except for him,
Darius agreed. Poison Dagger seethed, but could not deny it.
We have all made sacrifices to the first quest, Baldwin told her. You cannot pretend you are the only one. It is a cruel custom, but necessary. It is the only way to ensure that every member of a ruling family is worthy. Unless you're a poison dagger, of course, Lilith sneered.
At least all of mine have killed. Isn't it true yours never has?
Dante said accusingly.
Not even a slave?
Killing is easy. Lilith gripped her wand with a single hand. Shall I demonstrate?
The others placed hands on their wands as well.
There is no need for that, Baldwin said. We are all members of the Council of Seven.
So what? We'd all kill each other if we could.
Very true,
Poison Dagger muttered.
We don't kill each other openly, Baldwin said.
Gareth nodded.
That would lead to civil war and our ruin.
No, Lilith said bitterly. Instead, we send each other out on impossible quests and let someone else do it.
If your son is strong enough, he will survive, Gareth said. If not, then he is of no use to you.
Just what are the conditions you intend to place on him? Lilith asked.
Baldwin told her.
I see, Lilith said. Do you even still pretend this is anything but a death sentence? Only someone with the potential to be a Grand Master would have any hope at all.
I am sorry, Lilith, Baldwin told her.
I know this is drastic, but you have forced us to act.
He wasn't sorry. They all wanted her son gone, and this was their way of going about it.
If the 6 of you are determined, then I suppose I have no choice.
Her son was doomed.
Yes, Lilith said. The council set 3 conditions you will have to fulfill before you will be allowed to return home.
I've never heard of that before.
It's rare, but not unheard of, son.
All right, mother. What are the conditions?
Lilith had to struggle to keep the fury out of her voice. She wanted to at least give her son hope that it was possible.
You must make a contract with at least 3 monsters and bind them to your service. You must defeat at least 1 knight in battle.
She struggled to get out the last, most impossible requirement.
You must acquire a dragon's egg, or a dragon, and return with it.
Waldo stared at her, hoping she would suddenly laugh at him and tell him this was all some huge joke. Her somber manner convinced him it was not.
Bind 3 monsters, defeat a knight in battle, and bring back a dragon's egg or a dragon?
Is that all? Why don't I slay an army or capture a castle while I'm at it?
Careful, son, they might add those.
Waldo stopped and considered the situation. Making a contract with just 1 monster was extremely dangerous and quite a feat. Getting 3 would be an even greater challenge.
Knights and white mages were the deadliest threats most dark mages could face on a first quest. Only the strongest candidates or the most desperate would deliberately seek out a knight. Dragons were far and away the rarest and most powerful of the great monsters. Even his mother, an experienced Grand Master, would never try and face one alone. That was work for an entire army and dozens of skilled mages. Unless you had some sure method to keep the mother far away, stealing a dragon's egg was nearly as dangerous.
Why does the council want me dead?
They are afraid you are too weak to replace me as both head of the family and as a member on the council.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised.
Do you agree with them, Mother?
No. Never.
Even though I've never managed to kill anyone?
Killing is the easiest thing in the world, my son. All it takes is not caring about your victim. You care too much. You feel too much. It's only ever hard when you let yourself care.
She knew how true that was.
I'm sorry. I can't seem to help it.
His mother looked at him wistfully.
You remind me of your father.
Waldo had never known who his father was. He had asked his mother a few times, but she had never given him any information. From the color of his eyes, it was obvious his father was from Avalon, the home of the White Mages.
Is that a good thing?
To me it is, Lilith sighed. I had hoped that eventually you would learn to harden your heart. Unfortunately, there is no more time.
She paused. If you were to find a place in the greater world, no one would come after you.
You mean go into exile? Waldo said, shocked. Never come home again?
If the only choices are exile and death, which do you prefer?
If I can't come home, there's no point to any of it. All I've ever wanted is to make you proud of me, Mother. This is the only place where I belong. The only place I've ever wanted to be. I want you to be proud to call me your son.
He really is like his father,
Lilith thought fondly. She felt an ache in her chest and forced herself to ignore it.
If that is your choice, then so be it.
His mother surprised him then by placing a soft kiss on his cheek.
Whatever happens, I am already proud of you.
Chapter 2. Setting Out. Waldo was in his room getting ready. It was tradition that he would have one last meal and then leave. He would not be permitted to take any coins or precious metals. Waldo would have to travel alone on foot, without any slaves or undead. From the moment he stepped outside the castle gate, he was expected to rely on his own strength. Whether he went north or south, east or west, it would take weeks to reach the border. Though he would be without money, Waldo did not expect any problems until he left Alteroth. The peasants would give him food and shelter. They would not dare refuse one who wore the black robes. Once he was on foreign soil, he truly would be on his own. Come the morning, Waldo would be given a couple water skins, as well as a week's worth of travel food. He had a backpack where he would carry spare clothes, as well as some other items. These were spread out over his bed, and he was going over each of them. First and foremost was his spellbook. Inside it was every spell and ward he had ever been taught, including the ones he had never managed to get right. The basic ones that he used constantly had long since been memorized. He could perform them without a second thought. The more powerful and complicated magics he would need to study and memorize first. Along with his spells and wards were the recipes for all sorts of potions and remedies. Waldo was skilled at making potions, and was an expert at using different herbs and ingredients to bring out the most potent effects. As he walked through Alteroth, he planned to spend as much time as possible going over the binding ritual. Getting that right was of particular importance. It was the only way he could force monsters to obey him. The order in which he would need to attempt things was obvious. He could not even think about acquiring a dragon's egg yet. Fighting a knight with his current abilities was akin to suicide. He would have to start by acquiring monsters. Once they were bound by magical contract, he could use them to do his fighting. It would be dangerous, but it was his only choice. Next to his spellbook was his wand. Like all dark mages, his had been carved from human bone. Etched into it were three words. Corpse lover, pride, and power. He tapped it with a couple fingers and frowned. A wand was supposed to magnify the effects of its user's spells, the way a hammer multiplied the force of a blacksmith's blow. It was the most basic tool used by mages. One of the many things that had frustrated Waldo over the years was the fact he'd never gotten much out of his. Though he could use them. The problem was there was never a real difference in the spell's effect. When his mother used her wand, the spell was usually two or three times more powerful. When he used his, the results remained frustratingly the same. This wand was his fifth. He'd asked for new ones in the hope it would help, but the results never changed. There were small cloth sacks, each bound up tight and with a description written in ink. Ginger, mandrake, basalt, sulfur, wolfsbane, ground obsidian, and a dozen other spell components. He had two pens and a bottle of ink. Beside them were six knives. To a magic user, daggers were both a useful tool and a weapon of last resort. Next were the maps. Alteroth was a large nation and nine countries touched its borders. To the north were three kingdoms. From the west to east, there were Wylef, Lothos, and Dragal. To the east was Avura, and to the southeast, Drasia. To the south, running from east to west,
were Rutenia, Galicia, and the Barony of Lamur. On the western border, between Wylef and Lamur, was Vizcaya. Within Alteroth, the nations of Wylef